a DHS shutdown, and the White House insists on maintaining its warrantless secret police. In Minneapolis, ICE ramps up targeting of legal observers. Meanwhile, ICE officials testify in front of Congress for the first time since the shootings of Preddy and Good. Under pressure from lawmakers, DOJ is unredacting more of the Epstein files, but not nearly enough. This, as Lutnick, on the hot seat. Also in those Epstein files, six new likely incriminated men whose identities we don't know yet. White House pushing Republicans' SAVE Act to include an end to mail-in voting. Trump threatens to block the opening of a newly built bridge between Canada and Detroit. White House to cut $600 million in a congressionally appropriated health funds to four blue states. And Rubio blocking Trump from Cuba talks as Cuba's crisis continues under its full blockade from all goods and supplies. In a huge regulatory cut, Trump EPA to gut climate policy this week. And Trump's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau shutdown has cost Americans now $19 billion. 6,000 San Francisco teachers strike. It's likely to go to its second day. And lastly, just breaking, Tom Malinowski concedes to Anna Lilia Mihaiu. I just botched it. Mihaiu. In Jersey's 11th district. All this and more on today's Majority Report. I'm also just getting word that, is that true? Antonio Delgado just ended his campaign for lieutenant governor. More on that in a moment. I don't know where I, yes, Delgado just dropped out of that Democratic primary for New York governor. That may have been a fait accompli once Mamdani endorsed Hochul. He deserves a lot of credit, though, because his running in that race to the left of Hochul in the run-up to Mamdani's election and in the weeks after convinced Hochul that she had to help Mamdani achieve at least some of his priorities early on. And so Delgado deserves some credit for that. Folks can go back and look at our interview with him that we did, I guess, about 6 months ago. Can't quite remember. Maybe it was four or five. More on that later. In the meantime, lots is happening now, both with these ICE hearings and the Democrats' refusal at this point to fund a DHS, at least permanently. We don't know if there'll be another continuing resolution. John Thune is out there making it sound like negotiations are going well in a way to encourage senators to vote for a continuing resolution to give it a little bit more time. But if Democrats hold strong, which, again, I'm not sure what the polymarket bet would be on that.
Go Bills.
But exactly. You can read the social media about that, but we'll see. The biggest issue is the Democrats requiring judicial warrants to enter into people's homes, which is basically like saying, follow the Constitution. Don't know why that it would even be controversial, frankly.
Why that has to be one of the asks.
I mean, would Republicans be happy with IRS agents being able to come into homes with just an IRS administrative warrant? Want to go in and see if you guys, how you really are? Like, are you really as broke as you say you are?
Yeah. You really declaring everything?
Could we have AOC's CDC without warrants go in to check and see if, like, you've actually gotten your shots? I mean, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. The other ask, of course, is no masks. And then there's about eight others. The no mask one has a little wiggle room just so that
it just can't be in an arbitrary or capricious.
Yeah, don't fashion. Wear a right. mask capriciously. OK, that's what really upsets me.
It's just have a little intention with your style. That's what I think the Democrats are saying. But we'll see. There would be a couple of hundred, perhaps up to 250, maybe 300,000 workers who would be put on furlough if the DHS shuts down. Now, of course, ICE has a big slush fund, but Trump seems to be afraid of a shutdown. So there is some leverage there. We'll see. Meanwhile, around the world, we're hearing daily of investigations, of resignations of people in, particularly in Europe, resigning from government, being investigated because of their association with Jeffrey Epstein. In this country, I don't know. It seems to get you just like a, I guess they make a documentary about you. But lawmakers are starting to see the unredacted files. People are starting to go through these millions of files. And it is not lessening the pressure. Here is Representative Becca Ballant of Vermont. Yesterday, speaking to Drop Site News, she's been going through the unredacted Epstein files. Now, understand, lawmakers have access to this. They have the ability to go on the floor of Congress and read off all this stuff. You remember, Mike Gravel did this with the Pentagon Papers. They are protected by doing so. And frankly, I don't know why they don't do this. The fear that Gravel had about the Pentagon Papers was, am I actually revealing any U.S. military secrets that may put service members in harm? At the end, obviously, it did a huge service to anybody who was conscripted into that that war because it helped bring it to an end. But I don't see what the danger is here to go out. You don't have to name victims to the extent that they haven't already been exposed. So I'm surprised somebody hasn't already done this, although I'm not convinced we won't see it soon. But here is Representative Becca Ballant.
Just wanted to ask you, have you had a chance to review any of the unredacted files over at the DOJ, the Epstein files?
I did.
You did?
Yeah, I just
and
came from there.
What can you tell us?
There's a bunch of sick fucks.
And I mean... anything more that we don't know? I feel like that's pretty well established.
I know. I think the part that is just so disgusting is that so many people knew.
Did he have any ties to any intelligence agencies? We've established some in our reporting, but wanted to know based on the file.
I only had about a half hour, so I'm going to go back again tomorrow. Okay. So mostly today I was just trying to go through a couple documents that was particularly interested in finding out.
What were those?
One was related to whether or not Trump, you know, had ever kicked Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago, as he claimed.
What'd you find?
That is not. It's not true.
It's a lie.
It's a lie.
That's a big deal. Because Trump's story up to this point has been like, oh, I kicked him out. I did not have good relations with Jeffrey Epstein, et cetera, et cetera. And if the Epstein files prove that that's a cover story, it becomes even worse, because it's not like we don't know that he's associated with Jeffrey Epstein. If he's lying about what happened after whatever it was, 2005, when he supposedly kicked him out, it raises real question as to what is there. Before we get to the number two, let's go to number seven. Ghislaine Maxwell was ostensibly testifying to the House Oversight Committee. And here's a split frame of what she said. In 2010, it was Jeffrey Epstein. 2026, it's Ghislaine Maxwell.
Have you ever socialized with Donald Trump in the presence of females under the age of 18?
Though I'd like to answer that question, at least today, I'm going to have to assert my Fifth, Sixth, and Fourteenth Amendment rights, sir.
Are you aware of Donald Trump ever engaging in sexual activity with an individual introduced to him by you or Jeffrey Epstein?
I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to silence.
Have you?
It's obviously her right to invoke that, although, and I would imagine this would have been brought up before if it was the case, that you cannot exert this right once you have already spoken to it. Now, we don't know what she was spoken to with Todd Blanche. Ostensibly, Todd Blanche being the assistant attorney general who went to Ghislaine Maxwell and interviewed her for something like 6 hours, presumably asked all sorts of questions, did so in an official capacity. We should also mention again that that he was Donald Trump's defense attorney days before he was made an assistant attorney general. After that interview, Ghislaine Maxwell was transferred against all Bureau of Prisons regulations to a minimal security facility where she was allowed to purchase or be given a puppy. Here is Ro Khanna talking about Ghislaine Maxwell giving pleading the Fifth Amendment multiple times.
I submitted to Comer a letter with six or seven questions. Things like, who were the other co-conspirators? Who were the other men who raped these underage girls? Did she have any conversations about a deal with Donald Trump? Now, she's taken a blanket Fifth Amendment on any question. And my view is that many of my questions don't in any way incriminate her. So we'll see what she does. But there's seven questions that I have specifically asked. And the assumption is she's pleading the Fifth to each one of those. And the American people will see that there's an inconsistency. Why did she not plead the Fifth when Blanche asked her questions? And now she's pleading the Fifth about things that don't implicate her, but may implicate many of the other powerful people in the Epstein class that committed these crimes.
I really don't know. I don't know the answer from a legal perspective as to where one can invoke legitimately the Fifth and how this would be enforced. I would imagine the ability to compel testimony, regardless of the someone pleading the Fifth, is going to change if Democrats take control of Congress, because they're going to have a little bit more leverage. I also don't know, as a legal matter, whether you're allowed to take the Fifth after you've answered questions about it in the first place. or ostensibly answered questions about it, right? Because we don't really know what Todd Blanche asked. We just know what Todd Blanche said that he asked. We don't know what she answered. We just know what he claims she answered. There's the more that people dig through this stuff, the more questions are raised rather than answers given to it. There was the DOJ writing up Epstein's suicide the day before it happened. You know, I got the date wrong yesterday at the beginning of the show. Happens. Doesn't give you a lot of faith in the competence level of, I mean, I do this every day. And so there's some days, particularly on a Monday, where I may get it wrong. But I'm not working at the Department of Justice, the chief law enforcement agency in the country. And am not reporting on the supposed suicide of a guy who could have implicated the president of the United States and whose suicide just happened not to be caught on camera that night because of a bug in the system. You sort of feel like somebody would be like, hey, this is a big deal. Let's just make sure everything you're writing here is okay. So it's like a two-page document.
Dot your I's and cross your T's.
Here is Representative Melanie Stansberry and making the point. Like, right now, the British government is going forward with an investigation as to whether Prince Andrew gave Epstein any type of sensitive information. Now, it's quite possible that Jeffrey Epstein said to Bill Clinton and to Bill Barr and to Bannon and all his connections. Remember, he had connections with the White House until essentially he was no longer living. It's quite possible that Epstein said, I only take information from Prince Andrew. The rest of you guys, that's not what this is about.
It's like a mafia hierarchy.
Yeah, I don't. That's just, I don't feel comfortable having our relationship be this transactional, Larry Summers.
I don't want it to affect our friendship.
Yeah, I just, that's for me and Prince Andrew. He and I have a different relationship than I have with all these other world leaders, Ehud Barak. So I just want you to know that's different. I mean, why is there an investigation in England? They're former monarch, and we have nothing in this country. Nothing. Here is Representative Melanie Stansberry making that argument.
Now, we have a lot of questions for Ms. Maxwell with regards to what actually happened in Epstein's affairs, who was directly involved in the sex trafficking, money laundering, and influence peddling scheme that she and Jeffrey Epstein were involved in, how Donald Trump was involved, and whether or not he committed any crimes himself, as did his many associates who are named in the Department of Justice files. Let us be clear that Donald Trump is not only named thousands of times in the latest release from the Department of Justice, he is named over 38,000 times in the files that were released 2 weeks ago alone. And we know that that only represents half of the files that the Department of Justice has in its possession, including files that were used for direct investigations of perpetrators, people who committed crimes, people who were co-conspirators in those crimes, and individuals who knew of those crimes. We know that there are multiple administration officials, including Howard Lutnick, Elon Musk, who served as the appointee for the DOGE efforts in the White House. We know that the Secretary of Navy. We know that Steve Bannon. We know that there are more than three dozen associates, family members, and individuals directly associated with Donald Trump named in those files. Now, There are now at least 9 or 10 other countries across the world that have opened investigations or forced their leaders to step down because of their mere association with Jeffrey Epstein. And the United States government is engaged in an active cover-up of the largest sex trafficking scandal and influence peddling scandal in the history of the United States, and Donald Trump is right at the center of it. And the person who is living to provide the evidence, who knows what is going on, is trying to invoke the Fifth to buy her clemency. So,
That's Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico. Here she was on, what day was this? Last week, she was talking about Trump and his mention in the files about being subpoenaed in a trial involving a 13-year-old girl. This is number 6.
To be honest with you guys, I actually went through the files this weekend in depth. Donald Trump is not only named over and over in them, it is discussed this trial in which he was accused of raping a 13-year-old at Epstein's house. There is extensive discussions about a subpoena of Donald Trump in one of Jeffrey Epstein's cases in which he was accused for rape and sexual abuse. He was subpoenaed and gave a deposition in that case. There is extensive discussion between Donald Trump, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Mr. Wolf about not only Trump coming to his house, but, Epstein says in these emails that he has photographs of Trump with girls. To be honest with you guys, I actually went.
There's obviously you would think this would require an investigation. And Republicans are refusing to investigate this. I mean, that's just the bottom line. The Republicans are refusing to investigate this. And I can we know if they are covering this up? I don't know. Can we go to Kalshi and see what the predictive markets think? Did Donald Trump engage in any of this? Here's the problem that the Republicans have is if Democrats continue to press, which I hope they will, and it's quite clear that, you know, and I will cop to having some measure of skepticism about how sort of like deep this ran through our sort of government at one point. I mean, prior to the release of these files, I was like, well, you know, Trump may be implicated, but this is a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And it's quite clearly bigger than Epstein. And it requires investigation. And here is a little taste of, I think, what's going to happen to Republicans if they continue to stonewall. And it's going to get much worse for them if the Democrats take control of Congress. But I think this type of stuff is going to certainly inhibit Republican chances in the fall, unless, of course, Donald Trump rolls out ICE and starts collecting ballots, which I think is, again, check Kalshi, but that's not a bet that I would shy away from. Here's Laura Ingraham. This is in July of 2025, and I gotta think it hasn't gotten better. This is at TPUSA back in July of 2025, and particularly now, I have a feeling it would be a little bit even more pronounced.
How many of you are satisfied? You can clap. Satisfied with the results of the Epstein investigation? Clap. Okay, I told you to clap. You guys aren't listening. I'm not going to grade you on a curve. So I was going to get to that. How many of you are not satisfied with the results of the investigation?
Not only is that not shocking, I would imagine that that level of dissatisfaction, if there is an ounce of integrity in any of those people's bodies who are sitting there, which up for debate, but if there's an ounce of integrity, if they had any sincerity in what they were talking about in that moment, I would imagine, I don't know how you can get more unanimous than that, but I would imagine that applause would be, going on for about a half an hour.
Yeah, like no one's going to applaud, yes, I'm satisfied. They might not boo as heartily, but it's really difficult to say, yes, this is great. This is what I asked for. I feel delivered for.
In a moment, we're going to be talking to Melissa Sanchez and Jody Cohen about that raid on a Chicago apartment building that happened in September, where supposedly, as I think they used Black Hawk helicopters and rappelling from helicopters to go after Tren de Agua. And it turns out, not so much. These guys have done a great report in ProPublica. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, a word from our sponsors. This first one is a product that I was using years before they came to us to sponsor the program, and that's Delete Me. Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. I mean, pretty obvious why this is a service I would have been using even over a decade ago now, because there's tends to be a little hostility towards people who do this. But that hostility is crossed. You don't need to be a host of a YouTube show to get that from online. Plus, with all the identity theft and phishing that goes on now, that type of information can be easily turned against you. Hackers will buy stuff on the dark web, and then they'll combine it with information that they can buy from a data broker, easy as spending, I don't know, $2.95 to find your name, your address, your phone number, your emails, relatives, past addresses, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of times they'll use that information either to steal your identity or to go in and attempt phishing attempts, which have gotten a lot more sophisticated these days. But Delete Me does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal information from data broker websites. Delete Me knows that your privacy is worth protecting. You sign up, you provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. Delete Me sends you regular personalized privacy reports showing what they found, where they found it, and what they removed. And here's the key. Delete Me is not a one-time service. These sites repopulate, plus they seem to like there just seems to be new ones every single day. Delete Me is always working for you. It's constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. I want to thank Delete Me for sponsoring the Majora Report. And I want to thank Delete Me for, frankly, the service. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me now at a special discount for our audience. You can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/majority. Enter the code majority at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/majority. Code is majority. And we have and all that information will be in the podcast and YouTube descriptions as well. We've got a new sponsor, Rocket Money. And for me, I found something that I must have signed up for, I don't know, ages ago. It's really only a couple of bucks a month. But when you have that for like 8 years, you start to realize like, oh, that was hundreds of dollars. We'll talk about what Brian found when he signed up for Rocket Money. But what Rocket Money is, it's a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Want to thank Rocket Money for sponsoring today's episode. It's super helpful in finding stuff. You'd be surprised. You'd be very surprised at what you forget that you signed up for. Also, I am trying to sort of keep track and actually get on a budget. I'm several years away from, retiring, but I want to get a sense of like what I'm spending, where I'm spending it. Maybe my kids won't be the same drain on me. They will be down the road, but Rocket Money is incredibly helpful. Brian, do you want to tell people what you found that you had signed up for that you were not aware of?
So Julie emailed us and was like, hey, Rocket Money's offering us free Rocket Money subscription. So I was like, I'll do that. And I logged on and I've been paying for Rocket Money since 2022.
Well, so there you go. You'd be surprised. But it's super helpful. To find out, Julie had used the service long before they became sponsors, and she loved it. And so when they came to us, it was an easy decision because Julie had great experience with Rocket Money, and I'm now working on budgeting, setting some goals, and it's interesting to see what you spend your money on. Me, not clothes. There, that I had to find that out. But it gives you real-time alerts for large transactions, upcoming bills, refunds, and low balances. Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Go to rocketmoney.com/majority to join. That's rocketmoney.com/majority. rocketmoney.com/majority. Quick break. When we come back, Melissa Sanchez, Jody Cohen, one, a reporter on immigration and labor of this ICE raid on a Chicago apartment building back in September. Right back after this. We are back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Emma Viglin out today. Joining me, Melissa Sanchez, Jody S. Cohen from ProPublica. And before we get to both of you, I want to play this clip from ABC 7 from back in September 30th of 2025 that interviewed residents of this Chicago apartment building the day after it was raided by ICE.
To one woman who actually lives in this building, and she says she was detained by ICE agents overnight, and she says they took everyone and then asked questions later.
They just treated us like we were nothing.
Patricia Fisher said she came out to the hallway of her apartment complex on the corner of 75th and South Shore Drive in her nightgown around 10 Monday night, only to find ICE agents yelling police.
It was scary because I've never had a gun put in my face. They asked my name and my date of birth and asked me, did I have any warrants? And I told them, no, I didn't.
She says she was then handcuffed and released around 3 a.m. Fisher says she was told if anyone had any kind of warrant out for them, even if it was unrelated to immigration, they would not be released. Citizen App video shows the chaotic scene overnight. Neighbors tell us there were dozens of ICE agents. Neighbors like Ebony Watson says they ducked for cover as they heard several flashbangs go off.
They were terrified. kids was crying, people was screaming. They looked very distraught. I was out there crying when I seen the little girl come around the corner because they was bringing the kids out too. Had them zip tied to each other. That's all I kept asking. Where's the morality? Where's the human? They, one of them literally laughed. He was standing right here. He said, them kids.
Watson says budget trucks and military-style vans were used to separate parents from their children. Other neighbors say they saw agents destroying property to get in the building.
And they had a big 15-inch chainsaw with a round blade on it cutting this fence down. We're under siege. We're being invaded by our own military.
The FBI did confirm this morning that they did help the U.S. Border Patrol carry out a targeted immigration enforcement operation in this area, and they say they have been supporting these efforts at the direction of the U.S. Attorney General.
Okay, Melissa Sanchez, Jody Cohen, welcome to the program. So that was the report from September. And Melissa, give us a sense, like how much of what that report discusses was actually the case? And where can you fill in terms of just like what happened that night? I mean, I'm particularly struck by the budget rent-a-trucks that were supposedly used to separate people. But talk to us about what you know about that night.
Sure. So most of what was in there is true. It was a really scary, massive operation, unlike anything seen in this country in a big city in recent memory. Something like 300 federal agents were there, different immigration agencies, the FBI, ATF, et cetera, heavily armed. There was a Black Hawk helicopter. Like there was images of agents rappelling down onto the top of this five-story building. It's 130 units. It's a huge building on the south side of Chicago, pretty low-income, distressed area. And the publicly, what the Trump administration said at the time and continues to say is that the building had been taken over by Tren de Aragua, the big, scary Venezuelan band, that gang that the Trump has gone after over the past year. And what we found in reality is zero evidence that that was the case. There were dozens of Venezuelan families that lived there alongside U.S. citizen, mostly African American families. The vast majority of the people that we talked to and subsequently met were paying rent, apparently not necessarily to the landlord, but to other folks in the building who were taking their rent and pretending they were the landlord. But the government claimed it was a big victory against terrorism. They claimed that they got two Tren de Aragua members during this raid of the 37 people who they arrested who were immigrants. We haven't found any evidence that that was the case. There were zero criminal charges filed against anybody that night.
Wow. So, Jody, given and in the course of your reporting, I mean, the separation, at one point I saw reports that they were separating Black people and I guess presumably Venezuelans or Latino people into separate, like budget rent-a-trucks, and trying to determine. I mean, this was a complete fishing expedition, but is that the case?
That's what the residents told us, that there were separate vans, that the Black residents were put in one van, and those who they thought were immigrants were put in a different van. I mean, as Melissa said, this was an operation unlike any seen in this country in recent memory, with helicopters and rappelling agents. But also what made it different was that Border Patrol had invited a camera crew to follow along and show images and make kind of like a movie out of this that they shared. So you could see the operation beforehand with Greg Bovino, the Border Patrol commander, out there saying, "We are here. We are going to get, you know, Tren de Aragua members. We're here to make the community safer." And then you can see video of them parading out immigrants, in one case, you know, looking for tattoos, looking, you know, kind of asking them questions right on camera. And that was all. And you can see people being, as you said, put into different vans.
So, Jody, give us a sense of like of what the sort of genesis, I guess, of this raid was. It does not sound like it was, well, maybe they got it. Maybe they were told that they got a tip that Tren de Aragua was there, or what? But tell us what the genesis of this raid was.
Well, what they said the genesis of the raid was, what the government said the genesis was to get, because they had intel that this building was occupied by gang members. Now, what was suspected from the beginning from the residents was that the landlord was involved in, and perhaps the property manager as well, were involved with talking to the government. But they, neither of those individuals have talked publicly about it. And DHS and other federal officials have not addressed their involvement. But what we were able to show recently through arrest records for some of, for two of the men arrested that night, in the narrative of those arrest records, what Department of Homeland Security said was that they had intelligence that there were immigrants who were unlawfully occupying apartments or squatting. And that is the narrative of, in their words, why they focused on this building.
And
they also, the narrative also says that the property manager and the landlord gave them verbal and written consent to enter the building.
And what do we know about the history of that building, though?
So there could have been motivation for doing that, because the history of that building is that the company that owns the building had been in court trying to evict people, squatters, from that building. That they're, you know, her company had obtained court orders throughout all of last year to evict people. That the Cook County Sheriff's Office had been in that building carrying out those evictions just weeks before the raid. That there were a lot of problems with the building, with the inspections. The company had failed almost every inspection for the past 2 years prior to the raid. The building was a real mess. I mean, there were wires hanging everywhere, water, electricity didn't work, the elevators didn't work. It was a dangerous building, and there was criminal activity in the building. There were many, many, many calls to emergency police calls to the city.
But Melissa, to the extent that there was criminal activity in that building, no evidence of like gang activity. It was rather like, it just seemed like the Wild West there.
I think it was a little bit like the Wild West, and it might have depended floor by floor. There were some floors that were more clearly occupied by single men who may have not been paying rent, who may have been squatters, both African-American and Venezuelan. And a lot of floors that were families, that were people who were working, children who went to school right across the street. Like Jody and I walked into that building a few times. Some of the apartments were really nice. Like it was actually stunning. Some families paid $1,200 a month for their units. Others were squatting in places that you would not want to walk into, places that, like Jody described, like the walls were falling apart. They smelled like urine. And yes, there was crime. I mean, we do want to say, like, some people told us that they saw men, both African-American and Venezuelan, like openly walk around with like guns. There was drugs, there was prostitution, there were parties. All of that stuff is true. And there was a murder there last summer. There was a murder of a Venezuelan man by presumably another Venezuelan who is now in custody. And that case may have been part of what triggered all of this too, because there was an attempt by ICE to get custody of this guy from the Cook County Sheriff's Department. And this is a sanctuary city and state and county. And so we did not turn over this man to the feds. And there was reporting from Breitbart afterward that then prompted, you know, there was a kind of an escalation of attention from the right about this place and accusations that the people involved in this murder were gang members. But nowhere in any of the police records that we have obtained is there evidence of this. I have interviewed 15 of the 16 Venezuelans who live in that building, and not one referenced any gang activity. They acknowledge there's some young guys there who are in trouble, but people were not from the state of Aragua, where this gang is from, and people were not, it was not where there was not organized crime there. There was some drug dealing, there was some prostitution.
And so where were the Chicago police? Where was the sheriffs? I mean, I presumably they were called at various times if they were able to evict people. Presumably they were called. Like, and was there no representative? Like, was nothing getting fixed in that building by the landlord? Melissa?
What do you think, Jody?
Jody?
I mean, I think that there were fixes from time to time, but it would fall back into disrepair and the problems would continue. Even after the raid, the there was a judge in Cook County. The building was in foreclosure, and the judge said, okay, you need security there 24 hours a day because anybody could walk in there even after all the attention on this property. And so the property manager hired security, but within 2 weeks, the security was gone. He said they weren't doing their job. I had to fire them. It just, there was not a lot of, there were short-term fixes that maybe the elevator would work for a couple days and then it wouldn't work again.
And the consequences were horrendous. I mean, Jody and I, one of the times we went, it might've been 3 weeks after the raid. I think we were on the third floor of this building and we met an African-American woman who I think had Section 8 and she lived there. She didn't have any legs. They'd been amputated and she couldn't leave her unit. She couldn't leave the building because the elevator hadn't been fixed in weeks. And so there were just serious consequences for the people who lived there.
Yeah, speak more to that. Like, where are these people who are living there now? I mean, I saw footage. The place looked completely ransacked. And if there was no repairs happening beforehand, I imagine some people were able to, like, you know, pay for their own repairs or do their own repairs. What is the state of the building now? And, like, what happened to the people who were living there?
So after the raid, there were about 24, I think, people who were still on the rolls for paying rent. They were still rent paying tenants. Either they were paying or they
out of how many units?
130.
I think there were 130 total. How many were occupied after the raid by rent paying people? Probably about 24. And eventually in December, the judge who was overseeing this foreclosure case said that everyone had to be out of that building, that it was no longer safe. She ordered everybody out. She appointed a receiver for the building, a new property management company, and gave each of the remaining tenants had some stipends. I don't think they were all that. I think they thought they were not all that much, and they were forced to leave.
And that's the U.S. citizens, the African-Americans who lived there. The Venezuelans, the immigrants, it was mostly Venezuelan. There was a Nigerian man. There was maybe a Mexican man or two. Almost all of those people were deported. They were either deported back to Venezuela. You know, we have complicated relations with Venezuela. Some were sent to Mexico. And I talked to one today who's still making his way down. He's in Panama right now. Some other Venezuelans, women with U.S.-born children, were released in the U.S. with ankle monitors. One of them, her husband was deported to Venezuela. She's got three little girls, all in diapers, and she's living in a homeless shelter. So people's lives have just been turned totally upside down since this happened.
And at one point, you write about a consent decree that may have been violated. What, Jody, what can you tell us about that consent decree?
So that's how these arrest records became public. There's this ongoing consent decree. It's been many years now that limits when federal agents can carry out warrantless arrests. It sets limits on when they can do that. There has to be probable cause that they would flee, for example.
Is this a consent decree that is applicable in Chicago, or is this nationwide?
It's Chicago and the area around Chicago.
Okay.
And this predates this current administration. It predates the Operation Midway Blitz, which was the deportation program that the administration was carrying out in Chicago, that predated what's happening in Minneapolis now. And so, yes, this consent decree goes back a while, but it is being enforced now by immigrant rights lawyers who are saying that these recent arrests were in violation of the decree, and those lawyers are working to get people released. Now, as Melissa said, not just with this raid, but with so many of the people who were arrested over the past, 6 months or so, they, are not here anymore. They've been deported, they've left. And what the lawyers are working on now is trying to get relief for the people who are still here in the United States, either to get them out of jail, out of the detention that they're in, or to loosen the restrictions that they're on if they're already out.
Melissa, are those people, those are presumably immigrants, are they U.S. citizens that have been detained? And those folks, to the extent that they're immigrants, why have they not been just summarily deported? Because that's what it seems like ICE is doing, is they're deporting people before things can actually work their way through the court. And so by the time the judge says, where is this person? They're like, we don't know. They're gone. They're not in our custody anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the people we're referring to who are affected by this consent decree are immigrants. So they're the immigrants who were arrested and detained. Some U.S. citizens were detained too that night, but just for a couple of hours and for the most part released. No, that's exactly what happened. But the problem with this is it's Venezuelans, and we have a problem with Venezuela. And for like, we're not regularly deporting people to Venezuela the way we can to Mexico or Honduras or some other country. And so a lot of these guys were either.
That's why we sent them to CICOT.
Unfortunately. And I mean, Venezuela did start taking back some deportations after the whole CICOT thing, but not at the same level that we were putting people into detention. And so some of these men were accepting deportation, or they were given voluntary departure, what you give to good immigrants, but they were languishing in the facilities. And sometimes they would be waiting weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks for just to see a judge, because they'd be getting bounced around from jail to jail. And every time they get bounced around, they have to see a new judge in a new district. And so their cases were getting prolonged, and they were getting sick and tired. And they would call me from these facilities in Texas, in Kentucky, in Indiana, like crying, sick. They couldn't see doctors. They were, one of them told me he was like losing his mind. The guy who just called me from Panama, who spent, I think, close to 4 months in jail before he finally got deported to Mexico. And he could have been one of the people who was helped by this, by this recent action on the consent decree, but he was just so sick of being in jail that he gave up. Most of these people just gave up and went back home, even though they were going back to a country that is like on the brink of, I don't know what with this country, given, you know, that we just went and arrested the president of Venezuela. So they're going back to a country that they had fled years ago. The economy in that country is still on the floor. There's no stability. A lot of the people who were deported from this raid have actually already left Venezuela and are living in Colombia or in Chile, because that's the only place they can go to make some money to survive.
The story of this person that you spoke to today or yesterday and endured those 4 months, can you tell us a little bit about what he said about the conditions there? Because we're starting to hear more and more reports, particularly out of that facility in Texas, but I've also heard about it as far north as Berlin, New Hampshire, that no heat, barely any food, no sleeping accommodations, basically, I don't know, low-grade torture. I don't know if there's grades of torture, but as a way of basically having these people say, I forfeit whatever rights I had to any type of legal process and to go. What can you tell us about what you've heard about the conditions in these facilities?
I mean, everything you just described. I mean, Gabriel would call me and, you know, somehow somebody snuck in a phone at one point into one of the facilities, I think in Arizona, and they would show me videos, or he'd call me on video calls, and I'd see like there weren't enough beds to sleep on. The beds didn't have mattresses. It was very cold. They were hungry. The food wasn't good. The water was contaminated. People were afraid that if they drank the water, they would get sick. They'd get fever. We talked to one guy who got a TB. He thinks in the facility, but he in a facility in Indiana, but it's unclear.
There are also reports now of TB going around in some of these facilities.
I think in Texas there was some. Yeah. I mean, at one point, Gabriel, I mean, they would get bounced around, which made it really hard. I mean, like, just Gabriel, I think, might have been passed around to 12 or 13 facilities or back and forth to some of them. They would lose belongings in the transfer. They might have had like a gold chain when they went in, and then when they left, nobody could find the gold chain. It would cost money to see a doctor. They wouldn't get medicine. They would get like a pill. Everybody got the same pill. It was unclear what the pill was. It's really hard to verify these allegations. There were plenty of allegations. The last place that Gabriel was in was in Texas. I think it was East Montana. And I think that's where somebody got killed. There was talks about somebody who committed suicide, people attempting to commit suicide, hunger strikes. It's like, you name it, it was happening. But I mean, it wasn't CICOT. We also have interviewed
interviewed people who spent time in Sikhot. So they weren't getting beat up and tortured in the same kind of way as maybe we saw in El Salvador. But the conditions were miserable, and the conditions were so much that people did give up on good cases, good asylum cases, because it wasn't worth staying here any longer. And some of the people who gave up too, like faced like potential imprisonment in Venezuela because they left for political reasons. But even that was preferable than staying here in this country.
I wanted to ask you specifically about that in terms of like their status. So if you are in an asylum process, you are here legally. You are here lawfully, right? I mean, you are you're in process. You don't have permanent residency. You don't have any type of permanent legality, but you're not undocumented because you're specifically documented. The court knows where you are. The authorities know where you are, and you're going through the process that we have to determine your eligibility to stay here longer. How many of those 37 that were charged, how many were in the one or that process or a different type of process?
So, I mean, we don't know the story for every single one. Of the ones that I've spoken to, I'd say all of them entered the country kind of in the same way, either through an app that gave them an appointment to go to the border and say, I want to ask for asylum, and they came in through that process. Or they crossed illegally and then found the nearest Border Patrol agent and said, hey, I'm here seeking asylum. And so, yes, they're like technically here illegally, but they do have this like permission to wait out their case. And maybe half of them were in the process and still going to their court dates and doing all the things like they were supposed to. Some of them might have missed court dates, so they became more, they already had orders of deportation. Some of them didn't. And a lot of them didn't have court dates yet, so they were still kind of in the middle. And it's unclear whether they would have gone to those court dates because a lot of people were now afraid of going to court and getting arrested.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of the people did have work permits. Some of those had gotten suspended in some point last year, but they thought they were doing things the right way. One man I'm thinking about, Jan Carlos, who was a former paratrooper in Venezuela, he told me that the night that the Border Patrol like burst down his door and like grabbed him, he's like, my papers are right there. My papers are on top of the TV, trying to point to where his papers were. And nobody cared. He got swept up like everybody else. A lot of them said that when they saw the film crews like taking video of them as they were getting marched out, hands zip tied behind their backs, they're like, I'm here legally. I have asylum. My papers are inside. And like none of that was aired publicly. that wasn't talked about. And Jody and I went to maybe 8 or 9 of their hearings at immigration court. And like there were, like I said, a couple of them who did have deportation orders prior to all of this. But most of them, the fact that they had immigration court, they spent weeks in immigration court because they still had cases that had to get resolved. So, I mean, I think you're entirely right. But it's complicated because they're sort of in this gray area of like legal and not legal. And they're in this system where like everything is just pressuring them to just abandon their case and leave the country.
Jody, is there anything that we haven't discussed? Do you think that folks should know about this story? It's great reporting really important to be able to contextualize what we saw. Because I don't know that we've ever had a raid like that for without a knowledge of like, I mean, I sort of feel like in Philadelphia, you know, maybe we saw like, the raid on I think Push, was it where they attempted to, because they thought there was like a bomb making happening or something, but they had no idea who any of the individuals were in this building. And they just raided it as if it was like some type of military operation.
Right. And I think one thing I was going to say is just to expand what Melissa just said about the court hearings. I mean, before they were deported, we did go to, I think it was eight or nine different hearings for, you know, men who were detained that night. And not once did, you know, during those court hearings, they ask the lawyer for the government whether they're, you know, what the criminal history is. And there was no criminal history for any of these individuals. And as part of the consent decree, the government did have to produce a list and there were hundreds of names on it of people who had been arrested during a period of time in Chicago. And they listed their, you know, safety risk and their public safety risk. And in almost all cases, it was low. There was not a public safety risk for the people that they were detaining here in Chicago.
Unbelievable. Well, Melissa Sanchez, Jody Cohen, we will link to your piece at majority.fm and in our podcast and YouTube description. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Did I mention up top that that Emma wasn't here?
No.
I totally forgot. Yeah, she's a little under the weather.
I didn't know if you were just trying to be mysterious.
I was just trying to create a little suspense with the show today. It was Move that was bombed in Philadelphia in 85. I said push. I knew there was I knew there was some kinetic quality to it. We're getting old.
In our own city, just dropped a bomb into a block in Philadelphia.
Unbelievable. People, that era in the 80s, there was a lot of that type of stuff.
Yes.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes the show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the fun half, but you also get the free show free of commercials. Plus, you can IM us. And perhaps most importantly, you help this show survive and thrive.
Not rely on tech advertising owned by tech people.
Listen, I don't want to make a prediction about, you know, if we would ever do that. But there are predictive markets that will help you determine that.
Will the majority part business model ever collapse?
Was there ever a majority part business model?
We spent a lot of time today on the chances of Jesus coming back in 2027. Yeah. And believe me, there's really no way for you to make a lot of money on it unless you already have a lot of money.
Or if Jesus does come back before 2027.
The flip side is you could also vote. You could also bet that he...
If you have any inside info. Hey, Jesus, do me a solid and give me a heads up.
Right.
Send me a sign.
Jesus came to me at the end of my bed and said, take the bet.
It's going to be September 1st.
2027.
All in. It's definitely happening.
Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. In the fun half, incidentally, we're going to be talking about the jobs numbers that they are, the administration appears to think is going to be quite bad and are already providing pre-buttles for, but before we get there, Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Yeah, right after the show today on Left Reckoning, we got two Texas candidates, Etienne Rosas and Greg Stoker, talking with David Griscom about running for Congress in Texas, and Robert Scavarla talking about the Epstein files. So check that out coming up right after the show today.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, back. Back, back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Nightmare!
Can we bring back DJ Dinner?
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan. By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on! To pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.
We are back. Sam Cedar. Majority Report, Emma Vigeland out today. Ramona Frankenstein, Ham, our crew. The reports here in New Hampshire of the concentration camp in Berlin are beyond horrific and make me sick. What makes it sicker is that there are talks to open another one in Merrimack, despite the people being completely opposed to it. Any New Hampshire people in the audience who are as horrified as I am should call Governor Ayotte's office in Concord, let her know that we want the live free or die state to stay free of ICE thugs. Her office number is 603-271-2121. Tell her Ramona says hello or not. I'm not your mom.
These things have to be resisted with the full force of that people can muster for protest, because the Whipple building stuff, the stuff we're hearing about the Baltimore or whatever, these are concentration camps that the logic of that is people die in them and they start becoming death camps.
I mentioned this the other day. I saw a video of Congressman Ryan, because he's got a satellite one. They have apparently 8 regional concentration camps they're setting up with factories, massive factories, and they have satellite ones that'll go there. There's one, I think it's in Chester, New York. It's a very small village. There's going to be far more detainees there. It is a building owned by Carl Icahn, who is a big Trump supporter. So obviously there's a huge amount of corruption and graft associated with this. But theoretically, some of the groups can get together and try and get the zoning requirements pulled for, hey, this is a factory that you had built to produce widgets. It's not for housing human beings.
It's anti-abundance.
And it is an anti-abundance agenda, granted.
An abundance of data centers and concentration camps.
But the idea here is that these fights are local. And local politicians are not used to, their small town having a big protest against them. Now, it also, it's probably cheaper to come in and somehow grease the wheels for your local politicians. But
can your local community support it? Can it support a concentration camp that requires, plumbing and water and everything that requires the upkeep of a concentration camp in your community? All the thugs that are going to have to staff it with billy clubs. You don't want it there.
Do you have enough bars for the ICE agents to go drink at?
Yeah, enough enough telephone poles for them to wrap their Durangos around?
Exactly. Exactly. Crispy Business got a nice compliment on my Majority Report trucker cap from an employee at my my and Sam's local Alltown. Nice.
Hell yeah.
Socialist accountant. They're equipping these places with biohazard incinerators. How big are these incinerators? Ugh. I don't want to think about that. Jobs numbers are coming out tomorrow. You'll recall that I think I mentioned this last jobs numbers that came out, or maybe it was when the ADP report comes out. Generally, it's about between 140 and 150,000 jobs must be created to keep up with the rate of growth of our population. New people get born, new people become 18 every day, they enter the job force. If you want to maintain employment levels where they're at, you know, and there's a couple of different measures of employment as to whether people are looking or part-time employed, et cetera, but generally, it is about 140 to 150,000 jobs need to be created to remain on par for our jobs numbers. So if you get something like 220,000, that's pretty good. If you get something like 120,000, it's a little bit anemic. Now, technically, no one in the administration is supposed to see the jobs numbers. So maybe they sent out some of their peeps to, what do you call it, foam the runway for these numbers just on, you know, a hunch. This is Peter Navarro on Fox Business. Go ahead.
What one thing I want to note, the jobs report's going to come out tomorrow.
Yeah.
We have to revise our expectations down significantly for what a monthly job number should look like. When we were letting in 2 million illegal aliens, they're coming in. We had to produce 200,000 jobs a month for steady state. And by the way, all of the jobs that we were creating in Biden years were going to illegals. Americans were going to the unemployment lines. Mm. That's totally reversed. And now 50,000 a month is going to be more like what we need. So okay. Wall Street, when this stuff comes out, they can't rain on that parade. They have to adjust for the fact that we're deporting millions of illegals.
That's a good
out
point.
Of our job market.
But it sounds like you're expecting a weak number tomorrow.
No, not expecting a weak number. I'm just saying that going forward, yep. When we see a number under 100,000, okay. We don't wring our hands. We say, yeah, that's going to be steady state.
Peter, so great to see
it's
you.
It's all good, Maria. Always great to be with you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, let's break this down a little bit. So basically what they're telling you is, like, we've really got to lower our expectations. But the justification that Navarro, was that Peter Navarro or was that
Ron Vera.
Ron Vera. I get confused between those guys. Peter Navarro or Ron Vera was arguing that the reason why we felt 200,000 or 150,000 jobs needed to be created on a monthly basis was because anywhere from 150,000 to 100,000 of those jobs every month were going to immigrants.
66%, is that?
66% were going to immigrants. And what's weird is all of those employers, they would let the government know, I've hired somebody in this job who was an immigrant, obviously. As opposed to saying nothing, because I'm hiring these people under the table, and they
it's not just immigrant; he's saying undocumented.
Yeah, undocumented immigrants. Now, maybe he's arguing, "Oh, we're just deporting people who are here legally to work, and so there's less people, So you need less jobs to maintain.
Wait, why don't all the jobs we were creating for illegals just go to all the unemployed people that were being unemployed because Biden hates white people?
You don't need the need for those jobs are gone now. Those jobs,
what?
They evaporated.
I don't get what you're not understanding, Matt.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense.
But listen, I just before you
Wouldn't it be nice to have more jobs than less.
You say it's Peter Navarro or Ron Vera, and we can't trust him because he literally created a fake person named Ron Vera to justify his theories. We found another real person who is backing up Peter Navarro or
kind
Ron
of a
Vera.
Real person.
Well, it's Hassett. Also from who advises the president, who also has the same theory, weirdly enough.
The other thing is that there's a pretty big decline in the labor force because of illegals leaving the country. And so the break-even job number is quite a bit lower than it was under Joe Biden when there were people, you know, basically coming across the border willy-nilly. And so I think that you should expect slightly smaller job numbers that are consistent with high GDP growth right now. And that one shouldn't panic if you see a sequence of numbers that are lower than you're used to, because, again, population growth is going down and productivity growth is skyrocketing. It's an unusual set of circumstances.
Oh, it sure is. It sure is. Because, incidentally, under Donald Trump first term, we didn't have this like, well, we can completely, despite the fact that we've always said 140 to 150,000 jobs are what is required to be baseline. We had that same number during Donald Trump won, before Joe Biden was president.
How long can they blame everything on immigrants? Immigrants are stealing the elections. Immigrants are the reason there's no jobs. Immigrants are taking all the jobs.
They ruined football.
Immigrants, yeah, they're ruining the halftime shows. Immigrants, they're leaving the seat up after you piss. Like, everything is, it's just the immigrants. Like,
taking their wives.
Like, I mean, the conservative voter is the stupidest.
What's interesting about this, though, is that this is not for consumption for their voters. Right. Like, the number of people who watch CNBC and Fox Business is literally in the, you know, five digits. On a good day, we get the same amount of viewers as maybe those two places combined. This is them trying to spin the media and trying to spin the stock market, because, you know, nobody who's out of work or who's working two jobs or whose pay sucks or can't afford anything is going like, well, it's much easier for me now that there's no immigrants that I'm competing for this, I don't know, job where they take my driver's license and ask for my Social Security number and make me pay taxes, but didn't do that for the undocumented immigrants that they still announced to the government that they hired. This is really just to keep the stock market from panicking at these job numbers. Now, of course, the irony is that, and maybe they're saying this too, because they know they're a couple of months away from Trump being able to put on a new chair of the Fed. Because if they thought that Powell was going to stay in there, they wouldn't be saying that the unemployment situation is fine. Because remember, the Fed has a dual mandate. One is inflation and one is unemployment. If the Fed thinks that unemployment is growing and inflation is under control, they will start to drop rates. But if the Fed doesn't see a problem with employment numbers and they have a little worry about inflation, they're not going to drop rates. Trump desperately wants them to drop rates. And yet they're confident enough that their new guy coming in is going to push rates down, that they're basically pretending there's no problem with the job market because we've gotten rid of all the undocumented. I would also say with an aging population, having negative growth in our population is not good.
It's so crazy being from North Dakota and all these people being like, why can't we just, they're right, saying we can't, you know, rebuild. What did Steve King, we can't rebuild our country with other people's babies or whatever. Every small town in this country was populated by immigrants, by people who were like different churches, speaking different languages, like whether it was Scandinavian or whatever. Like, it doesn't exist without immigration. Like, this anti-immigration fantasy is it's a horrible utopian vision that can only fail. And we're encouraging it and actually sending occupying cities toward the delusion that can never actually be delivered.
This is Stephen Miller's fever dream of having a purified America. That's basically what it gets down to. When they talk about, like, you know, deporting people, it's not just, they're not just talking about undocumented. They're just like, we're going to get as many immigrants, legal or otherwise. We're going to denaturalize people because we just don't want that taint. That's what they're arguing. I'm going to call in and I will open up the phone lines in a bit. Not right yet. Soon. Which one is this?
This is Seth Dillon, Kerry Prejean.
Oh, no, I don't know if I want to even do that. Right, but let's just do this. Should we do this Lady Victoria Hervey? Which one is this? Is number 9.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Lady Victoria.
Oh, God, I should have known you're the lady. This
A spot of cuppa before we get to
A lord. Has a lord spoken?
Here is number 9. Sort of reminded me of, is this 9?
Yeah.
Howard Lutnick testified in front of the, I think it was the House today. And you'll recall that Howard Lutnick made a big deal. I can't remember. Was it on 60 Minutes or no, some other news show.
Pod Force One, or it was like the New York Post podcast.
Yes. Where he made a big deal of saying, like, I met Jeffrey Epstein once.
He was 2005. Disgusting.
And he, in 2005, he lived next door to us. I went over there with my wife. And he had a massage table. And he said, like, hey, come over, have a massage. And he went, you know, a little bit of this. And I said, this guy is disgusting.
I was there with my betrothed because I never leave her side.
And I never, ever went in there again. We'll talk about Howard Lutnick's testimony today. But here is Prince Andrew's ex-girlfriend. They've trotted her out. And again, they're now investigating Prince Andrew, not just for his essentially rape of
sex crimes,
but also the chances that he had given information to Jeffrey Epstein. But here's how, if you want insight into how, like, nobody cared what Jeffrey Epstein did. There was a report from Vanity Fair. I think you have it in the sound list.
I do.
It was a report from Vanity Fair in 2019, I think around the time that Epstein got arrested, where Vanity Fair interviewed the people who worked at the airport on Jeffrey Epstein's private island. Scroll up. There were two employees who worked at the local airstrip on St. Thomas. Okay, so it wasn't at, to get to Epstein's Island, you flew from St. Thomas, which is an island in the Caribbean. Two employees who worked at the local airstrip on St. Thomas tell Vanity Fair they witnessed Epstein boarding his private plane on multiple occasions in the company of girls who appeared to be under the age of consent. According to the employees, the girls arrived with Epstein aboard two of his Gulfstream jets between January 2018 and June 2019. Previously published flight records show the jets were airborne for at least one out of these 3 days. They stopped all over the world. Quote, on multiple occasions, I saw Epstein exit his helicopter, stand on the tarmac in full view of my tower, and board his private jet with children, female children, says a former air traffic controller. One incident in particular really stands out in my mind because the girls were just so young, they couldn't have been over 16. Epstein looked angry and hurled his jacket at one of them. They were also carrying shopping bags from stores not on the island. And they go on to say, like, we just assumed people would check on this. And you get a sense of, like, how it happened that he was able to sort of, like, live this lifestyle. They didn't care. Yeah. Even this woman, like, just perceived these people, these kids, as commodities. Good.
He knew everybody that was very powerful. So, like, if you were on the scene and you were powerful, like, to be honest, like, if you're not in those files, it would be an insult because it just means that you were a bit of a loser.
Right. So the people who aren't in the files are losers.
Yes.
Okay. Are you in the files?
Well, of course I am, because it's any journalist that wrote about it.
That's an astonishing attitude, isn't it? You're the loser because you're not in this. I find that jaw-dropping.
It is jaw-dropping. And here's Howard Lutnick testifying in front of the House today. And nobody seemed to, like, even notice it. He's being questioned by Van Hollen. And so this is actually in the Senate. And Lutnick says, like, I don't know, you know, I had forgotten that, you know, because Van Hollen says, like, we've seen the interview where you said you made a big show. This guy was disgusting. I never wanted anything to do with him again. And then you show up in the documents. Incidentally, there's reports that he was had like business deals with him, too. I imagine Van Hollen got to it. But listen to this exchange.
Did you have a dinner in Epstein's New York City home in 2011?
No.
So the information that suggests that there was a dinner with Woody Allen and Woody Allen's spouse at the Epstein residence, that's there's nothing to that. Is that right?
I actually don't know what you're referring to. There was, look, I looked through the millions of documents for my name, just like everybody else. And
pause it for a second. When he says, I looked through the documents for my name, just like everybody else. Matt.
I didn't search my name, no.
You didn't?
No.
Seriously?
I'll go to Jmail now. It didn't occur to me to say what.
I suspect that Howard Lutnick hangs out in circles where everybody's like, oh, shit.
Like, what's my exposure?
What's my exposure here? In fact, I bet Howard Lutnick was not the only person who searched his name. I bet you a team of lawyers, junior and otherwise, at the firm that represents him was looking through all of those documents for his name.
Same with every other member of cabinet.
Yes. So it's really more the circles that he ran in.
I do not show up in the Epstein files.
I actually looked your name up.
Feeling like such a loser.
Loser! Okay, good.
I looked through the millions of documents for my name, just like everybody else. And what I found was there was a document that says that I had a meeting with him on in May, I think.
Oh, yeah, May.
At 5 o'clock. Okay. Not dinner or otherwise, for an hour at 5 o'clock.
I like that he can only speak to what it says, not what his memory is.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? Like 100%. And as far as I can tell, my lawyers have told me, it is somewhat exculpatory.
Yeah, Woody Allen dinner? I can't think of what you're saying, but
I'm
the
sorry.
Document
Woody
says...
Woody Allen?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Doesn't ring a
bell.
Unless
there's a document that says...
5 o'clock.
Is that the guy from Home Improvement?
Yeah, no, Woody Allen, no. Amazing.
The reaction from the lady, whatever her name was, there's a certain...
Lady Victoria Hervey.
Oh yeah, I had her full title up. She's Lady Victoria Frederica Isabella Hervey. She's the daughter of the 6th Marquess of Bristol, half-sister of the 7th Marquess. That sounds a bit... Can you do that? Can the 6th Marquess marry the 7th Marquess? And the sister
it's
of...
It's actually encouraged.
And the sister of the 8th Marquess and Lady Isabella Hervey.
In fact, we encouraged the daughter of the 8th Marquess to actually marry the daughter of the 6th Marquess of the...
You know, if you get rid of the monarchy, you can still keep the buildings. Just look at what France did. I'm just saying. Still have the tourism.
Ramona Frankenstein. Woody Allen? The New York filmmaker?
I can't remember him. I may have or may not have had dinner with him.
I don't recall.
That document says I did have
interesting.
One.
Very interesting. Going to open up the phone line, 646-257-3920. I'm going to warn you right now. Some of you will be on hold for an hour, and I will not get to you. Caveat caller. 646-257-3920. We'll get to the Bad Bunny stuff in a moment.
Day two of Bad Bunny Gate.
They are so upset about it. It is fascinating. But let's talk about Bill Maher for a moment, because this garbage is just impressive. Wait, is he on with Nancy Mace?
Yes. Nancy Mace.
Okay.
I wonder what they have in common.
Oh, originally posted by Tommy Robinson. Interesting.
She seems more of a Club Random type of guest.
Oh, yeah. So I think she's trying to burnish her image. So I don't think she's going to go on something where she's intoxicated because she's just recently made a claim that she never, ever drinks.
She has a genetic condition.
She has a genetic condition
that
makes her incapable of drinking. She's only capable of holding alcoholic beverages.
And that's I think everybody has a genetic condition where booze will destroy your organs if you drink every day.
100%. 100%.
That's why you got to baby bird it. Yeah.
I don't know if Sam's here for that video. I don't think I saw that. 646-257-3920. Maybe our phone's broken. Oh, wait. Oh, I just turned it off. Okay, I turned it.
Oh, yeah. Did we have some issue with that, like last week with the phones? Right, that's right.
I'm not seeing anybody in the queue, though. That's the weird part. Oh, there we go. So here is Bill Maher talking with Nancy Mace. The relentless drive. And, you know, I've seen clips where there are... Zionists who are arguing now is our time to reform the image of Israel because Larry Ellison now owns TikTok and there's no more images that people are seeing. And it's there is a significant chunk of Zionist thought that is completely deluded. And this, too, like here is Bill Maher. And this is like sort of this isn't unique to Bill Maher, although Bill Maher is uniquely convinced of how righteous and right he is. And he is so wrong. He exposes himself for being such a shill, but also an idiot.
Yes.
I'm sorry. This is you have to be stupid to think that anybody with half a brain isn't going to be able to pick apart what he's about to say right now.
If you don't know what's going on in Nigeria, mm-hmm. your media sources suck. You are in a bubble. And again, I'm not a Christian, but they are systematically killing the Christians in Nigeria. They've killed over 100,000 since 2009. They burned 18,000 churches. This is so much more.
All right, pause it. Let's just stop right there with the premise. So he says they... I just want to point this out. We're going to start it over again. He says they, the numbers he's giving aren't the ones that I've seen. I've seen about half that, maybe 55,000, which is not good, obviously, over the course of the past 17 years. He says they, Maybe he gets to Boko Haram, but just listen again now.
This is so much more. These are the Islamists, Boko Haram. This is so much more of a genocide attempt than what is going on in Gaza. They are literally attempting to wipe out the Christian population of an entire country. Where are the kids protesting this?
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. No one will talk about it, so thank you. Oh, yeah, thank you. Nancy Mace has no idea about this at all. But here's a couple of differences between Israel killing 70,000 is a minimum. We know that Israel now accepts the health ministry numbers, but these are, we still have bodies under the rubble. We have had, these are the most conservative numbers. 70,000 killed. If you want to say 100,000 have been killed in Nigeria, let's use his number. A, Boko Haram is not a government. It is not a government. We call it a terror organization or a militant organization or a rebel organization, but it is not a government. A. B. We do not fund as a country Boko Haram. In fact, to the extent that this country has done anything in this conflict, we have provided to the Nigerian government some military assistance and aid.
Can we bomb them on Christmas?
Yeah, we'll have, so the kids that would be protesting would be theoretically what? Protesting against the terror group? Like, why wasn't he calling for, where are the kids protesting? When people are protesting against the Iraq war, was Bill Maher saying, why aren't people protesting Al-Qaeda or the Taliban? It's because when you protest against the Taliban from the United States, you make zero difference. But our government is funding this genocide. Yep. We are literally enabling it. It is not possible to happen without our help. Like that, like it is so, first of all, it's disingenuous because this guy's not doing stuff on Nigeria. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The only,
it's
interest,
just some talking point that he was given from like, Zionist sheet that he's supposed to crib, but putting that aside, don't make it about hypocrisy. This is one of the dumbest possible arguments you could make. The protests against what this government is doing in supporting Israel are not valid because the protesters aren't protesting a militant organization that the U.S. is already, if the extent that they're involved in it all, is fighting against. It's so dumb. They like literally would be saying to like, I don't know, people in Minnesota did not protest when ICE was in Charlotte. So why are they doing it now? Where were they when they were in Charlotte? How come you don't see any protests in Minnesota about ICE and what they're doing in LA? I don't see one sign in Minnesota saying ICE out of LA.
Bill Maher, he doesn't cite a source in that clip, but he talks about media diets. And I would just recommend to folks this piece by In Current Affairs recently, how the U.S. manufactured a Christian genocide claims to attack Nigeria. And just this, a paragraph that I'll read here. Meanwhile, even many religious institutions in Nigeria, which are perceived as being divided by their religious identities, are fighting back against this politicization of religious identity. In 2023, the Christian Association of Nigeria and the Nigerian Supreme Council for Islamic Affairs issued a joint statement calling for unity to deter foreign actors from using religion as an element for political manipulation of the people of Nigeria. Now, that's obvious, and it should be known by anyone who purports to like care about religious strife. The fact that it's overlooked is because they're just helping propaganda by people like Eric Prince and Marco Rubio, who are interested in the gold in this country and that will foment violence in order to get access to it.
Pandemic anxiety remembers Michelle Obama's Bring Our Girls Home campaign against Boko Haram. I mean, just the idea that you can't protest this if you don't protest that is absurd. But comparing protesting a country that our government is enabling to one that our government is, it's not a government, it's not a country, but that our government, to the extent that it's weighing in on, is weighing in on the side that he's talking about. It's just, it's absurd.
Yeah. A lot of these, I've seen Zionists say that white people are being genocided in South Africa too. It's the same sort of thing, which you sensationalize violence against your in-group and disregard it by your out-group. The Muslims are killed at least as much as Christians in Nigeria.
Calling from a 267 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 267. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Andrew from New York.
Andrew from New York. What is on your mind?
I probably should have called in yesterday. I missed the show. But you guys were talking about Zoran's endorsement of Hochul and all about like strategic. What could be our demands from Zoran under Hochul? You know, seeing that, they were so ready to do the universal child care, which was awesome. I'd love to hear, what you guys think we could ask more of from Zoran, with this sort of, I don't know the word.
I'm not 100% sure I know what you're asking. I mean, look, he's got a... freeze the rent for the rent stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
We want the free and fast buses. These are his main campaign pledges. Free and fast buses. Mm-hmm. The universal child care. What remains on the universal child care is a dedicated funding mechanism, which is going to come in the form of increased taxes on probably the wealthiest in New York. And it's also going to have to come from the state as well. That remains to be seen. And he's certainly going to be trying to deliver on that. And then there's the pilot program with the grocery stores, which I think frankly is, I don't think that's very heavy lift.
It's not exactly turning every grocery store into a free publicly owned grocery store.
No, it's like five grocery stores and it's going to be a pilot program, essentially. So I think somebody's asking on the IM, Mike from Texas, does this early endorsement from Mamdani and Delgado dropping out mean that Mamdani got enough assurances from Hochul on his priorities? I guess we're going to find out.
I think it more shows that, I mean, if the Delgado campaign needed that endorsement for it, I don't know if it was set up to win. I mean, that's my initial reaction on it.
So we'll see, but I appreciate the phone call.
All right, bye.
Bye. A Square, oh my God, it's so hard to get through now, even with an IM, but that means more listeners. MR Crew, it's been a long time, always here listening, but last year was a bear to say the least in many aspects. Sure, the same for all. Love to see white people in Minneapolis use their white privilege like that county official in that clip you showed last week. For those looking to donate to good folks in Minneapolis, try Powwow Grounds, owned and operated by Native Americans. Remember, solo el pueblo salva al pueblo. Keep it lit, MR. Oh, no, Sam. Not sure if you knew that Randy was off the air in 2025 battling cancer. Godspeed to her and us all in a way that we can resist and survive the regime. I did not know that. I hope Randy, she's talking about Randy Rhodes, is doing better. My thoughts go out to her. She is one of the OGs. She was doing liberal left talk radio down in Florida before virtually anybody on on AM talk radio. Calling from a 678 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Excuse me.
Yes, it is you. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Oh, geez. Okay, this is my name's Kelsey. I'm calling from Georgia.
Oh, geez, Kelsey, what's going on? Did you not have your phone right?
No, I had it.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just calling. I wanted to give a shout out to a candidate running in Georgia's 7th district against Loudermilk, Case Norton. He's a DSA member, and I'm very nervous.
No, you're doing great. It's Georgia's 7th?
Georgia's 7th district.
And is this primary?
I think the primary's in May. He's running against one other guy, but he's a union member with IATSE.
Okay, Cameron, we should say that Loudermilk, my understanding is Loudermilk is not running again.
Is he not?
Nope.
Oh, show you how much I pay attention.
Well, that's all right. So
either way, yeah.
Case.
It's a very heavy red district, though.
You know, these days, I'm just looking at a list right now. The DCCC has added 5 new districts to its target list. Representative Jeff Crank, which is Colorado's 5th. Trump won that by 9.1%. Representative Brad Finstad, Republican. Trump won that by 12%. Montana's 1st district, Ryan Zinke, Trump won that by 11.5%. South Carolina's 1st district, Trump won that by 13%. Virginia's 5th won it by 12%. I don't know what Trump did in Loudermilk's district, but without an incumbent, it seems like at least the DCCC, they're not necessarily, you know, they're relatively small C conservative in where they're going to deploy resources. They're looking at districts where Trump won by 12 or 13 points if there is no incumbent. And so, you know, who knows what the chances are there.
Sure. Yeah. I just want to give them as much attention as possible, help with fundraising and whatnot. It's still pretty early, but, you know, whatever I can do to help them.
Case Norton. Is it K-A-C-E?
Case Norton. C-A-S-E.
C-A.
And then Norton.
Norton. Okay. The big race, I think, also, and we'll, it's case four, the number four, congress.com. Folks can check out.
You can donate on Act Blue to them.
Yeah, that's Georgia's 7th district. The big race it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be important. It's going to be the Georgia's governor's race, too. But we have at least one Sam Squatchzilla. That's my district. So now you got a candidate. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks. Jack from Queens. Hey, friends. JMEL is struggling to pay its server costs due to the unstandably high traffic it's seen over the past few weeks. Please consider giving them a donation to keep their operations running. Tools like this are super important in this moment. Catwalk, you should have searched yourself in the Epstein files, Sam. Both you and the majority report technically show up in it. Interestingly, you don't show up on JMEL, but you do on the official justice.gov site. Yeah, I think I was in a tweet. Somebody sent that to me. I was in a tweet that got passed around or something like that. I don't know. All right, let's take one more call, and then we'll get to this bad bunny gate. Calling from a 463 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Derek from the website Conservative Brunettes Arguing Loudly and Burning You with Cigarettes. I'm calling to confirm your recent subscription cancellation. Is this Sam Cedar?
This is Sam Cedar. Yes. Why did I cancel that through? Through Rocket Money?
Yes, from a service called Red Rocket Money. It looks like you're one of our longest standing members to Conservative Brunettes Arguing Loudly and Burning You with Cigarettes. So we just wanted to make sure that there was nothing we could do to keep you as a member.
I actually am shocked that I canceled that, because that was one of my favorite sites.
We were too.
Yes. Well, I'm in the middle of something right now, but let me get back to you and I'll re-up.
We want to remind you that as a premium member, you are entitled to monthly visits from one of our Reaganite Amazons who will extinguish Marlboro Reds on your forearm while telling you at full voice that taxation is theft and that the Equal Rights Amendment is worse than slavery. Do you still wish to proceed with your cancellation?
Of course I do, and I want to get my free oranges that come from Anita Bryant with that cigarette burn. I appreciate the call.
Okay, we will. Thank you.
That was good. That was pretty good. Calling from a 308 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it is Kowalski, the last Kowalski of the House of Frank residing in Nebraska.
Kowalski, from Nebraska, how are you? What did you, we name dropped you the other day.
Oh, when?
When we had Dan Osborne on.
Oh, yeah, I caught that. Thank you for doing that. I've been seeing a lot of chatter with some of the people I know around him. I'm really hoping that he's doing well in, like, Lincoln and Omaha. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of energy in the rural area for just about anything. But that could also work in his favor, like, people just don't show up to vote, which I think it's going to be the case. I think we're going to see a really low turnout for Republicans, at least in rural areas. So, but
I wouldn't be surprised. Yes.
Oh yeah, there is. It's hopeless, but you know, some hope I've seen. Have you heard of North Carolina 14th District candidate Kate Barr?
No.
Well, I got a random Instagram ad of her campaign last night. I looked into it. It looks like she's employing the, some might call it the Kowalski strategy. She is running in the Republican primary, and on her website it says the only reason she is doing so is because she is a progressive and the district is gerrymandered to where only Republicans can win. So she is running as a progressive Republican.
I just checked out her site, katebarrcantwin.com, and she switched it to katebarrcanwin.com. Is that her? Your Republican candidate for U.S. House District 14?
Yes.
And
I believe it's the Can Win talks about her platform, which looks pretty good.
Oh, interesting. And so she is... she's running in the Republican primary. She wrote, plot twist, I'm not a Republican, but I am running in the Republican primary. Why run as a Republican? Because I'm an American and I care about my community. Running as a Republican is the only way to kick these corrupt cowards out of office. Your leaders should represent you. You should be able to vote them out when they do a bad job. Why not run as a Democrat in the general election then? Instead, they've rigged the maps to make sure the Republican candidate will win the general election every time. So she's running in this Republican primary.
More of this. Sorry, Kowalski. But I'll just say, I'll jump in because I came in late on this. But this is what the Nonpartisan League did in North Dakota. And I like this. Go on, Kowalski.
Oh, no. I was actually just about to mention that. I was going to say, like, this is exactly what we need. We need to start making the parties seem almost meaningless because this is where a party like power will begin to lose and like movements can start filling the void. It's one of the things that's giving me a lot of optimism lately is the fact that like Democrats are getting a lot of momentum going into this primary or not primary, but the midterms, but like the national party still has no strategy or plan.
None.
So if you have smaller organizations like DSA, or if, you know, maybe in some states there's some nonpartisan stuff that we're just not hearing about. I mean, maybe they're hearing about it at the state level. If you're organized, if you have a plan, guess what? You're more organized than Schumer or Jeffries. So you can probably punch above your weight. It's going to take us time to, you know, actually, you know, remove them from power. But this could be really good. And I mean, like I said, I think there's going to be a lot of depressed Republicans right now. And they definitely don't have an objective aside from, like, I don't know, working for demons, but
this is why, like, and this fight's not over. There was just a new group announced the other day by the Abundance people. But this is why stuff like Malinowski came out after losing in New Jersey's 11th to a very progressive candidate. Came out today when he announced that he was conceding that he will not support and no one should support anybody who's funded by AIPAC or a, an AIPAC cutout, essentially. But the Abundance people did not put their best foot forward. They have a lot of money, but they have really no broad ideas for how Democrats should function other than a couple of essays on zoning reform for specific places. May or may not be good, but that's not what you run on a national campaign on. Unlike what we've seen in the past, it seems to me, this time around with Trump, there is a sense that people are not looking to go the safe route with Democratic candidates. They are looking to go with I don't know if safe route is the right way, but they're not willing to go with what has worked in the past because it hasn't been working. And so,
yeah, corporate norms are giving way to actual populism, but populism that is going to be inclusionary because, it's just popular.
100%.
Everyone's sick and tired of this nihilistic corporate view of the world. So
100%. And this is, this is different than I've seen in the past, because after George W. Bush, there was a flight to sort of like safety, if you will. After Ronald Reagan, there was the allure of this corporate candidate. Now, to be clear, Bill Clinton won with 45% of the vote. But it feels like it's a little different this time. Appreciate the call.
Yep. Thank you. And folks, get out there, get organized. There's elections aren't everything. We need to start building our bases and whatnot. So everyone have a good one.
There you go. All right. One more call and then we'll go some more clips. Calling from a 509 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Sam, this is Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. Long time no hear from.
What do we got to do to get this shirt down one more button? I feel like it's like...
I don't have it down that
Join
much.
TheMajorityReport.com. We get another 150 members.
Super chat. Super chat. If we get to $100 in super chats by the end of this call.
Let's see how we do on Twitch with the hype train.
I don't know what that means, but yeah. So I wanted to talk about immigration stuff real quick.
Well, you're an immigration attorney, and so you would know.
Yeah. I'll be honest, it's been really bad. I think you touched on this yesterday. One of the big things we've been seeing really since like mid-December is the re-detention of asylum seekers. And in Washington state, the federal courts have been really good about letting people out on a habeas. I mean, you've got to go to federal court and say, hey, you can't re-detain this guy without giving him a hearing first and like explaining why you're re-detaining him, because ICE is inventing pretext for detaining people. Like, on our surveillance app where you have to upload a photo every Wednesday, you forgot a week back in August, and so we're going to detain you. And so at least in Washington, we've been pretty successful in getting people out. But even when you're quote unquote successful, that means somebody spends over a month in detention, and people are coming out with PTSD. I mean, even in the best case scenario where everything goes your way and you get things filed really quick and you've got a good judge, I mean, we're just destroying people. And then in the last couple of days, I've talked to three or four people who were sent out to detention centers in Mississippi and Louisiana. So they're, thousands of miles away from their families. One guy has been detained for over 2 months. His hearing is still showing as docketed in Tacoma with no hearing on the calendar. And he's been begging ICE this whole time, like, please just deport me. And like, I'm looking at these people, they're totally defeated. I mean, there's just a vacancy behind the eyes. They came here, they were threatened, you know, they faced real persecution in their countries. They came here with a hope of a better future. And they're looking at me going, I know I'm gonna be murdered in my home, in my country, but I can't, that future for me is preferable to the psychological torture that I'm undergoing in these detention facilities. And like, you know, even without the terrible conditions that we hear about and things like that, even if it's a quote unquote nice facility, which none of them are, but like just the act of detaining somebody is so violent. And especially in these types of conditions where people don't know, like, when will I be out? Like, what is even fucking happening in my case right now? And again, these are not people who've committed crimes. And even if they were, they wouldn't deserve this. But these are people who engaged the legal process. I mean, these are like legal obligations that we undertook following the Holocaust, right? And so, I mean, it's a small point, but it really pisses me off to see politicians immediately concede the, well, we did let too many people in thing. Like, yes. You know, all love and respect, but when Bernie goes on fucking Tim Dillon and says, well, you know, we did do a good job closing the border and we did let too many people in. Well, this is the fix. This is the fix to having let too many people in. Detain them, make their lives miserable, make it so nobody fucking wants to ever come to this hellhole ever again. That's what we're doing. And so it's bullshit that, you know, too many people were let in or whatever. But to concede that point paves the road for where we're going, which is, you know, this on steroids at the big lot, you know, distribution center or whatever they're doing. It's really disgusting. And I'm just like one guy. I'm like a solo practitioner in Washington. I've talked to like half a dozen people with these exact same set of facts, like in the last 3 or 4 days. And so, you know, whatever you're hearing about, it's worse. And so anyways, you deserve a lot of credit for really continuing to cover this. And it's just important that people stay engaged. And also, like, this is the last thing, I'll make it quick. I think we're coming close to $100 on those super chats. I'm going to drag it out a little bit longer. But
what
you know, just a really quick point. I know the left or the Democrats aren't going to accomplish anything for at least the next year. But like, this is such a missed opportunity to, I mean, body cams and masks, like, fuck that shit. Like, honestly, like, they're killing people on camera. I mean, this is an obvious point, but this is a chance to get up there and say, you know what? We don't just want that stuff, which is important, but we want the DREAM Act. And the DREAM Act is a moderated position.
Right.
Like, millions of people get left out of the DREAM Act. But bring attention to it. Like, the number one obstacle we continue to see over and over again is people don't understand how any of this works.
There's been no attempt by the Democratic Party to articulate in a political matter. There may be a policy document. The Biden may have sent a document down to Congress in 2023, but there has been no attempt as a political matter to articulate to explain the process and where the failure points are in the process in terms of like getting people into the system so that they can't be exploited, so that their exploitation doesn't help exploit other workers. I mean, that's what Bernie's issue is. It's a long time sort of perspective that undocumented immigrants hurt the workforce on some level, which was true to the extent that you have a workforce that's going to be exploited, and bosses can do that. But there is a solution for that, and that is don't make them undocumented. Put them into a system where their worker rights can be protected. But of course, we don't want to do that because we want to, companies want to exploit them.
For the first 18 or so months of the Biden administration, they had AOC kind of doing some of this work, which is to say, like, hey, why are there refugees coming to our country? Maybe our foreign policy has something to do to that. Maybe we should address these things first if we don't want to have to deal with that. Like, it's sort of a break it if you buy it sort of logic. And then they ran away from that to go be tougher on the border and call the Republicans bluff, or say that the Republicans were bluffing about all of it, which was a catastrophic thing. But AOC, in my opinion, was on that track. They just decided, they just got scared of committing to it.
Right. And the very, very last thing I'll say, I've been thinking about this a lot, because there's going to be at some point some effort to get back to like the regular, good, old-fashioned Republicans. Mitt Romney ran on the idea that we should make immigrants' lives so miserable. They can't feed their kids. They can't get a job. They lose their houses, that everyone leaves on their own. And that's what we're doing with a little bit of a push.
Yep.
That's the only difference, but it's the same policy. So the idea that there's some golden yesteryear, I mean, I guess if you go far enough back, you hit Reagan and we get an amnesty. I mean, if you want to go back that far, then great. But the idea that, you know, Romney and some of those guys, or Bush or whatever, were great on this is also bullshit. So anyway.
Ronald Reagan, before you go, what, because people are asking in the chat, what can people do, time, money, that would be helpful at this point? Helpful to immigrants directly who are dealing with this, or even to folks like yourself, organizations? Like, what would be, where's a helpful place for people to deploy their resources?
I think in general, like, trust your gut. My sister called me the other day, and she's like, we've got some neighbors, and I know they're immigrants. They don't all speak English. Like, what, you know, she was feeling kind of weird about going over there. And I said, go over there and say, we see what's going on, and we are fucking with you. If you ever need anything, we are here with you, for you, for your kids. If you need us to watch the kids or whatever, like, we are here for you and we stand with you. There's also, every time I go to court now, there's observers, and these are just like regular old white people who are showing up to immigration court, and they these are with, you know, local organizations, or, you know, I think they're mostly informally organized. And they're just there to make sure, like, there's no bullshit that goes down. In Portland, I know some of the volunteers there will offer to walk immigrants to their car because of some of the stuff that we've seen. So there's little tiny ways that people can get involved. There's lots of, like, here locally, we have an ICE watch group on Facebook. And there's, you know, all kinds of ways to get involved. I know, like, this local group spotted Yakima, shout out Yakima ICE cars in Minneapolis. And so they're doing incredible work with, you know, just tracking things, and they're always in need of volunteers. So if it's just reaching out to neighbors, or it's getting more involved, like, there's opportunities for literally everyone. And then all the usual boring stuff about calling and swearing at your representatives or whatever, sending emails and things. But there's also, like, the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. They've been doing a ton of, like, high level genius lawyer litigating on issues of detention. And that's a nonprofit. They've been at the top of their game. They were, I think, one of the first people to file action during the Muslim ban. And they've just been doing incredible work too. So there's also ways people can spend their money, but yeah, get involved. I mean, just be, and then show the people around you that you care, that you give a shit, and that you're invested. And that's what we're seeing in Minnesota. It's amazing. So
folks can go to icerrt.com and find their local immigration defense groups there. Icerrt.com. Ronald Reagan, thanks so much for calling, and hang in there. I know this has got to be a very, very difficult time, obviously, for your clients, but you as well. So hang in there. Take care of yourself.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. How about $100 to go one button up?
Is that what people are offering?
No, that's what I'm offering, because we didn't hit the button down.
Yeah,
but maybe $100 to go button up.
For more modesty.
Yeah.
More modesty. I know a couple of immigration attorneys, and the stories are all the same. We're just basically torturing people in these detention centers as a way, in lieu of a actual policy. Or that is the policy. What is this?
This is the Support Billionaires March.
Which number is this? I didn't see this one.
It's at the bottom there.
It is a 19.
A real captivating speaker here at this march to support billionaires.
Is this real?
Yeah.
This is real?
Yeah, this seems like something you would have done in 2004.
It is 100% the billionaires for Bush. There was literally, they would all dress in like tuxedos and go in and, you know, with like a monocle and go, I'm here for George W. Bush. And there are actually people protesting in support of billionaires?
Because of the wealth tax proposed in California. The billionaire wealth.
The one that Jensen Huang is okay with.
Effing insane. Let's watch this.
Should we start later or
start?
Or do you want to see some of the lead in?
I want to see some of the lead in. Yeah. I don't believe this is real.
Billionaires fund vital sectors of our economy like space tourism and yacht construction. Without them, who would fund our elections?
This is a joke.
No, let the guy. This looks like.
We'll skip a little bit ahead. There might be some pranksters here. Is there some real stuff here?
Yeah, the guy with the bullhorn is.
Okay.
He has to. He seems too dumb to.
This cannot be real.
Capable of satire.
By the class. But by their individual merits. There are good billionaires and bad billionaires, just like there's good people.
I'll note that there's no rich country that doesn't have billionaires. I think that, I mean, you can try and, if you try to get rid of billionaires, if you're trying to fight inequality and not just fight poverty, then you're going to end up with everyone being a lot poorer, with fewer companies being loot.
Yeah, why is it that some people seem to hate billionaires?
I don't know, why?
Sometimes they think that people have got rich by stealing from the poor.
Yes!
Ludicrous! It's true. Some people earn their fortunes by playing zero-sum games. But especially here in California and San Francisco, billionaires get rich by starting companies that generate enormous value.
My God.
They make things people want. And to be clear, the 1% do pay a lot in taxes. The top 1% of earners in California pay close to half of the income taxes in the states. What are we going to do if they leave? California already has the highest income tax brackets in the country.
I think
that there are some loopholes that we ought to fix. Namely, unrealized gains. Use this file for loans.
This is too sad. This is too sad. That's just some libertarian kid who has been doing nothing but locking himself in his room and reading Fountainhead and other Ayn Rand books. I mean, I'm sorry. Look, I don't even know how to respond to this.
My response would be, do you need the bullhorn? There's four people there.
Well, and all of them are basically just baiting you and pretending. The idea that billionaires will move, this whole thing of capital flight, goodbye. Go. We heard this about New York. We heard it about Massachusetts. The idea that their lives are going to be demonstrably worse. Now, will they try and, like, I'm going to set my residence up in Florida and try and hide? Yes, that's why we need a federal tax. And if they want to leave the states, leave the states.
See ya.
And you know what? Your citizenship, we're going to talk about your citizenship. If you're not contributing to the country, but you're extracting from it, then maybe you don't get to be a citizen. Maybe you're a holdings here. I mean, there are, without a doubt, ways of doing this. And we have a tremendous amount of income inequality. There are two things that we need to do. It's like we had this conversation with Professor Wu just yesterday. We got a tax on one end, and we also have to inhibit the ability for people to accrue this type of wealth.
He is a startup founder, according to several reports.
And here's the thing. We see a lot more a lot less companies being built.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the concentration of wealth. I mean, it's just the case that we had the greatest economic expansion during the time when we had the least amount of wealth inequality, during a time when we had the highest marginal tax rates that we've had in this country's history. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, I think it's like the Kauffman Foundation or whatever. We're at a very low point for new startup businesses because of monopoly compared to like even like 40 years ago.
Well, in Tim Wu's book, he talks about how all those companies just buy up everything. They don't care if it's going to be successful.
No, they buy it in the same way that you'd have like, you'd kill a newspaper story.
Yep. Yeah, they felt burned by Twitter because they didn't predict that was going to blow up. And so now they're just buying everything.
They buy everything.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, let's talk about the specter hanging over this country right now. And that is that it turns out the NFL is motivated by money and by viewership.
No.
And in service of that, they decided to put on an American singer who sings in Spanish, which is a language that it is hard for me to understand. I am...
It's the wrong colonizer's language.
No entiendo.
I am doing my babble, but I can only babble so quickly. And... it's really hard for me to understand when people are singing in Spanish, and I can't enjoy music unless I understand the lyrics. Like my favorite song, Louie Louie, Louie Louie.
1960s.
Here is Megyn Kelly carrying the torch.
Great
for
balls
me.
Of fire.
Here's Megyn Kelly carrying the torch for me. Explaining to Piers Morgan, who's British and doesn't understand what the halftime show of the Super Bowl is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be not necessarily about American performance, because we have a lot of great non-American
British rockers.
Yeah. It's supposed to be about a celebration of English.
The English language.
Yes.
Football, the English language.
Football, it's about English language. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Piers, but to get up there and perform the whole show in Spanish is a middle finger to the rest of America. Who gives a damn that we have 40 million Spanish speakers in the United States?
Well,
we have 310 million who don't speak a lick of Spanish. This is supposed to be a unifying event for the country, not for the Latinos, not
Pause it for one second. I don't mean to interrupt Megyn Kelly's bigotry or white supremacy.
Latinos.
But let me tell you something. Nobody said the Super Bowl halftime show was supposed to be a unifying event. It's just a show that it looks like a lot of people enjoy watching.
Yeah, exactly. A massively popular. I mean, maybe the biggest recording artist. I don't follow music anymore.
If I don't know the lyrics, I can't enjoy it.
10 million. Canadian who don't speak a lick of Spanish. This is supposed to be a unifying event for the country, not for the Latinos, not for one small group, but for the country. We don't need a black national anthem. We don't need a Spanish-speaking, non-English performing performer, and we don't need an ICE or America hater featured as our primetime entertainment.
Okay, what is the national language, officially, the national language of the United States of America?
Who cares?
I mean, English. And there's been a push many years to make it an official documented thing.
You don't have one.
If you would have let me finish my comment, I would have pointed out that people have been pushing to make it official.
Okay, right, so you're trying to make official...
This attitude that you have right here is why you in Great Britain have lost your culture. You ceded your culture to a bunch of radical Muslims who came in and took over, and now it's gone. We're not allowing that here, whether it's Hispanic, whether it's Muslim. It's not happening in the United States of America. That's why President Trump was elected. And whether it's Bad Bunny, who is American but refuses to speak English in his performances, or anybody else, we have to keep the Super Bowl, which is a quintessential American event. Football, that kind of football, is ours. They call it American football. And the halftime show and everything around it needs to stay quintessentially American, not Spanish.
They call it American football to distinguish it from soccer. It's not because of nationalism, you idiot.
Call it American football. And the halftime show and everything around it needs to stay quintessentially American. Not Spanish, not Muslim, not anything other than good old-fashioned American apple pie. There should be a meatloaf, maybe some fried chicken, and an English-speaking performer. That's what the Super Bowl should be.
Wait, she meant the singer Meatloaf?
No.
No, he's dead.
He would have been great, though.
Holographic Meatloaf.
Let me sleep on it. She can't be doing this for real. I mean, well, she can be. Actually, I think she may be one of the few people who are actually doing it for real.
The White Santa.
Let's play this greatest hit from her. Did we pull that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is number 16, I think it was. Just to remind you, Megyn Kelly's, her perspective on how things
should
be.
What she's remembered for.
This is back in 2013, where she was explaining back when she was on Fox before she left because she was, sexually harassed by her boss, who she now has forgiven, and went to NBC because Donald Trump was attacking her for bleeding all over the place out of all the orifices. Then she failed at NBC, and so she went back to the right wing. She was back reminding us that, well, Santa Claus, that guy who doesn't exist, has some very specific job requirements.
A white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed and I said, oh, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa. You know, and by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white. But this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is. And just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids. Okay, I wanted to get that.
How did you
all learn? The kids who are watching the Fox News. Wait, Santa's not white. Not Santa's not real. Santa's not white.
Is white.
Santa's real. I heard it on the news, and he's actually a white guy.
And at the end of this, if you go, you can see. Like,
you know what? It's also quite possible that there were a lot of kids watching this, and they've all grown up with that belief that Santa's real and he's white.
Well, yeah. What year was this? I was probably like 16 or something. Yep. What's up? Become an atheist because of these kind of idiots.
It has to change. You know, I mean. Jesus was a white man too, but you know, it's like he was a historical figure. I mean, that's a verifiable fact, as is Santa. I just want the kids watching to know that. Yes. But my point is, how do you just revise it?
So Jesus is a historically verifiable figure, just like Santa? Is that what
she's saying? She's doing that because of the kids. She doesn't want to, she both wants to pretend that Santa's real for the kids, but also that he's really, really white.
Yeah,
like he's real and really white.
I would
just like Jesus was. He was
really
the
real.
Caucasian guy in that neighborhood
in Bethlehem.
Yeah, exactly.
Both these guys super real.
They're super real. They're super white.
Super real, super white guys. And they love, yeah, love being white.
So she actually may believe what she's saying about how offended she was by the halftime show being sung in Spanish. The numbers seem to bear out that people liked it. And, you know,
seems to be rave reviews.
Isn't Bad Bunny, doesn't he do well in terms of sales?
I think he does okay, yeah. Maybe not Kid Rock level, but.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like right below Kid Rock. You're right.
Which number
is this? This isn't on the sheet. This is a late entry. There's been. Kid Rock lip sync gate has really taken the.
Is this the okay? So okay. We have the video on the sound sheet of him saying he was going to. All right,
let's
this.
Let's get to that in a moment. Hold on, I want to do. Jesse Waters also was extremely disturbed by the halftime show that he purportedly didn't watch, but found disturbing nevertheless, because he was probably watching Kid Rock's performance, which of course you would do, because it's supposed to be a unifying event. So everybody who wanted to be unified were tuning into the country music show talking about Jesus.
And to watch a pirate pretend to play cello.
And here's Jesse Waters. And here's the thing about Jesse Waters. I don't think he really believes any of what he's saying. I don't think he cares one way or another. But he knows this is his job. I actually think that Megyn Kelly deep down really does feel like white.
Yeah,
we should keep this white. In
less
English
cynical, more Klansy.
Yeah,
yeah. She's a daughter of the Confederacy, basically.
Yes, but Jesse Waters, I don't think he cares. This is just a guy who's just looking to make a buck and. I'm sure he's somewhat right reactionary, but I also don't think he'd get off the couch if he felt like he had to do something for his politics.
I like the Super Bowl not to be an international event. I like it when we kind of all come together as Americans, especially when it feels like the NFL is just using it as a marketing ploy to recruit Latin American audience on the heels of Latin America invading this country. 20 million pouring in, and that's what you see. You see all these foreigners speaking a foreign language with foreign flags marching into the camera like a caravan too soon. Listen, this was an open borders moment. Everybody knows it. That's what's going on here. And all the reporters, I like the Super Bowl.
I think he's trying to be funny. He doesn't understand humor at all.
No, he's not funny. But he's trying to, like... He's trying to both be hyperbolic and actually saying what he believes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the problem he has is both, like, you know, this corporation trying to get a worldwide, are you upset that the NFL is trying to make money now?
Also, I felt spoken to by, I don't really care about it, but to the extent that it didn't alienate me, I felt like it brought me together with a whole group of the entire world. The only people who are isolated
unify with white nationalists, not with the whole world.
Here's
Matt.
The thing about white nationalism is you, by nature, can't unify with other people besides lickspittle white nationalists. So, like, yeah, you're going to have to go back to before Jackie Robinson broke the color line in fucking baseball. Like, that's the world you want, you fucking idiots.
Let's just do number 13 here, because Laura Loomer, not necessarily the brightest bulb. She's very powerful within the administration. Honestly, she seems to have like some type of big sway in getting people fired and whatnot. But here is Laura Loomer's comment. And it is fascinating. I do think that the conservative mind is one which is incapable of any type of nuanced thinking or understanding anything like metaphor or any whatnot.
Irony, yeah.
Here she writes, it's kind of ironic.
Well,
it's actually sort of ironic that that's the way she started off.
Yeah, that's the irony.
Yes. It's She was so close. I know. It's kind of ironic how Bad Bunny was dancing on an electrical post. So far, correct. Yes. At the Super Bowl halftime show, Puerto Rico isn't exactly known for having reliable electricity. He could have highlighted the electrical grid crisis in PR and done some good with his platform, but he chose degeneracy. This folds into itself so much, I can't even express it, because of course he included the telephone poles for the very reason that she's pointing out and doesn't seem to get.
An artistic element providing
to
reference exactly what she's
reference
talking about.
Exactly. Like, literally, it worked perfectly for him. She raised the problem that Puerto Rico has in terms of its power grid. She just doesn't realize that she did that. That he made her do that.
So crazy.
Because there is no other circumstance where Laura Luma would be complaining about the power grid in Puerto Rico, except unless some of her crypto buds were like, we need more power down here because we need to churn out more Bitcoin or whatever it is.
Yeah, this is the same woman who chained herself to Twitter, right? But she only chained herself to one door, and so people were just
walking.
Don't want to
create a fire hazard.
Walking by her, yes. She was basically like a doorstop for one side.
I mean, look at, there's some more irony. Isn't it ironic how Edward Hopper, he made this painting Nighthawks, and it's supposed to be a cafe, and it's all empty and lonely. Kind of ironic, Edward.
Yeah, it's
loomy.
Amazing.
But Kid Rock has addressed some of this stuff.
Okay, and here's the other thing. There's a flip side to this. It's all well and good to have to have let yourself listen to Spanish for almost 3 minutes as you listen to a song that is songs that are some of the most popular in the world.
That you can't escape in any Uber drive you ever take.
But there's a flip side to this, and that is, of course, the aspersions cast upon Kid Rock.
The champion of the white race.
That even though he was singing and the microphone was down here and he's still singing and stopped mouthing words, and the song is continuous. Yeah. It's not like his
modulation and volume.
Modulation and volume, but also it's not like there was stop and starts in the song. I mean, it's more or less like very few downbeats where he's not singing, and yet he took a lot with the microphone. Like, he forgot what he was doing. And people said that, this was obviously lip-synced. Now, there's also rumor that it was pre-recorded. They pretended like it was sort of live. So there's a lot of controversy.
Very much seemed pre-recorded. The cut to the pirate playing cello and et cetera.
We have all these questions. So let's have a major news person get to the bottom of this. Here's Laura Ingraham speaking to Kid Rock, and he's going to explain this so that we all understand it.
Audiophile.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book called Shut Up and Sing about 20 years ago. It was pretty prescient. I just love music. This is one place I don't really need politics, okay? I love great music. So, Bobby.
Oh, pause it for a second. I should tell you.
The political musician.
The entire exercise of having an alt Super Bowl performance was political. Was good.
Questions about what happened during your first song on stage. People were talking about
the one song everybody knows.
It seemed to be a little bit out of whack. What was going on there?
Yeah, so it was out of sync. And actually, just to have some fun with the haters, I can't answer all the trolls, but it's going to be some fun. My DJ, who actually raps that song with me, he was not lit up. He's coming to Nashville tonight, flying in, and we're going to do that live in my living room, and I'm going to post it tomorrow to show people exactly how this works. Because, number one, if it would have been a lip-syncing, like people...
What is that going
to
show us?
The left is trying to throw me under the bus again, and the mainstream media and social media tries to amplify it. It would have been super easy to sync it up if it was pre-recorded. It was very difficult for the Turning Point production crew, who, by the way, I can't say enough good things about, but this was very difficult for him. I'm jumping around the stage like a rabid monkey, rapping my song, and I'm taking breaths, and my DJ's filling in the other parts of it, and it was very, I even told him when I saw the rough cut, I was like, you guys got to work on that sync. It's off. So it was just
wait, pause it for a second. Now, wait a second. He's saying that, like, just to be clear, you've been involved in production, Brian, in yes, like TV shows and whatnot, yes, right? Okay. So they're saying it's not pre-recorded, but there was a rough cut.
Yeah. How's that happen?
That doesn't happen unless it's pre-recorded.
Yeah. Like,
so in the pre-record,
unless that's what, when he was dropping the mic down, maybe he was telling his producer, this is out of sync each time he lowered the mic.
That is amazing. How does he not understand? He just contradicted himself. This was live, so we couldn't have. But when I saw them in the editing room, and I'm like, you gotta go clean up that sink.
She's just a hater.
The left, the damn left. The damn left trying to hate on me. That's good. I just gotta see this again.
Flying in, and we're gonna do that live in my living room.
Whoa.
And
post it, it's gonna prove it.
Exactly how this works.
When it went well.
Because number one, if it would have been a lip syncing, like people are trying to, you know, the left is trying to throw me under the bus again, and the mainstream media and social media tries
same
to
story
amplify it, it would have been super easy to sync it up if it was pre-recorded. It was very difficult for the Turning Point production crew, who, by the way, I can't say enough good things about, but this was very difficult for them. I'm jumping around the stage like a rabid monkey, rapping my song, and I'm taking breaths, and my DJ's filling in the other parts of it. And it was very, I even told him when I saw the rough cut, I was like, you guys got to work on that sync. It's off. So it was just a syncing issue that they had, and I know they tried to get it right. It was very difficult, but I'll answer all the haters tomorrow, and we'll put them back in the shut up and go back to trying to report the fake news.
You get put back into the shut up and try and report holy the fake
crap
news box.
That's unbelievable.
What?
I
and you have the footage of him proving us wrong?
But what is it? What would? Why would the sync be off because he's dancing around a lot?
I mean, musicians never dance around. The technology hasn't been worked out to let a musical artist dance around on a stage and also perform.
I don't understand what he means by sync. Like, is he saying that the audio and the video are out of sync?
Yes.
But what it sounds like is he was saying that the DJ backing track, because it sounds like there's a DJ backing track,
right,
was out of sync. But why would that? Why would that implicate
would
when he
cut
brought the microphone up to his face?
Yeah,
like nobody's saying that the DJ backing track was misplaced. People right are saying that, like, when you were purporting to sing, you didn't have the microphone up to your mouth.
If it was sometimes like a musician will play a backing
that's
track
not a
themselves
sync issue.
No, and they'll jump in and out, especially with hip hop. But there was no volume change when the mic was to his mouth. There was no double Kid Rock voice.
No,
yeah, he's
there
lying.
That mic was not on.
No, it. I think he's only arguing that somehow, like, it doesn't make sense that none of what he just said made sense.
Yeah, no, you can't make it because, again, there can't be a rough cut to something that went out live. Right. We're doing a live show right now. There's not going to be a rough cut of the majority.
It's going to be rough.
Where Sam's going to be like, you're going to have to clean up that. You have to clean up that extra sound.
Guys,
coming through that
you've
microphone
got to take out my stutter and all the ums and ahs. What is going on?
What do you mean
here?
Take it out for when? It already went out live.
Right. Do it again.
Like, for instance, when we were just listening,
I don't want to throw anybody under the bus with the crew here, but they don't seem to.
And I can't say enough good things about them.
But they keep all the ums and ahs in my presentation is because it's very
it's
difficult.
Sink.
As you can see, I'm going around like this all the time, and they
broadcast like a rabid monkey.
Yeah, I'll be doing this tonight in my living room to explain to you why all the ums and ahs are misplaced by the crew.
You know, something's a success when you have to get your DJ back in to do a live performance of it. I mean,
your living room.
Let's just see what they said. This is 5 minutes, so we won't watch the whole thing, but I'm curious.
What's up, people? We're here to address the fake news media and all the trolls that are piling on trying to say I was lip syncing on the Turning Point USA halftime to Ball with the Ball. First, I gotta say thank you to my DJ, Paradigm.
For taking the blame.
We call him Freddie.
Paradigm.
Flew down from Detroit.
To take the blame.
This Monday night. Flew down from Detroit this evening just so we can make this video for you.
Crazy.
Drink a couple beers. It's all good. So the turning point of it, Ball with the Ball, you know that song's chaos. And
it's just a song.
You've been doing it for 20 fucking years.
Try 30.
Let's go forward. I want to see, is he going to sing it or is he just going to spend the entire video explaining it?
Where's the minute in?
You know, we this sucks. And they sent me a first cut. And my comment was,
they sent me a first cut.
They were trying to line up. First off, if we would have done it, if we would have recorded it and then played like we were singing it, lip synced it, it would have been pie. It would have been pie to line up. It was very difficult for them because somebody clearly wasn't super familiar with the song. Also, when I asked them, you know, Freddie raps that song with me, my DJ. And they're like, he does what? And I'm like, oh no. I'm like, yeah, do we have any cutaways of Freddie? And they didn't.
No.
He wasn't, were you lit up?
No.
He didn't even have a light up.
I was lit up.
Any TV time?
No.
Can't say enough good stuff.
TPS did a great job, though, besides.
Sounds like the haters he's addressing are the TPUSA.
He's really throwing them under the bus. Fake production crew.
Put these guys in charge of the Super Bowl.
Keep going. Let's go a little further. I don't want to spend too much time on this.
So they don't have that footage. Now, it's extremely difficult for them to line up the sync. Could have been done if we had more time. I'm confident they could have got it right. I only got to see one edit. And I didn't think it was the end of the world.
What?
I saw what it was doing. The mic's coming down and the sync was off. Because when we're rapping it, that song takes so much energy. You've seen me. People have seen me do. I'm flipping mics. I'm jumping around like a rabid monkey on stage.
He likes that phrase.
55 years old. And so me and Freddie are like this. I'm like, and this is for the questions that don't have
any answers.
The midnight dancers and the topless
dancers.
The gang, the freaks, the cars packed with
speakers.
The G's with the 40s and the chicks
with beepers.
The northern lights and the
southern comfort.
And it don't even matter if your
veins are punctured.
All the crackheads,
the critics,
the cynics.
All my heroes
in the methadone clinics. All you bastards
in the IRS.
It's for the crooked cops
and the cluttered desks.
It's for the shots of Jack
and the caps of meth.
The half pints of love
and the fists of stress.
It's for my hookers all tricking out in Hollywood.
Okay.
That settles it.
I get
no
it.
Further
no,
questions.
No, I get it. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, I get it.
No further questions.
Sorry, I want to formally apologize to Kid Rock as a member of the fake media.
That he can still recite his song from 1997.
Yeah.
The only one that anyone ever knew.
I gotta say, I do feel closer to my fellow Americans after hearing that. With In Sync,
there was a literal marriage ceremony during Bad Bunny's halftime show. There was children hanging out with their family, taquerias, dancers, and they were saying that wasn't. And this, the topless dancers and doing meth and chick with beepers.
And I wouldn't compare him to a rabid monkey like Kid Rock likes to, but he was dancing around a little bit from what I saw. No sync issues.
Folks,
it's good that there was some family entertainment though for TPUSA.
Yeah,
I do appreciate that.
Very family friendly.
Folks,
that ends our phone call portion of the program. Apologies, I know people were on hold for a long time.
You got to fly down to Nashville from Detroit to talk about how great our set went.
Yeah, that song's chaos, man. It's like Frank Zappa played in 19 different time signatures live.
It's like Fish improvising.
Yeah.
I still can't even understand what he's arguing here.
He doesn't know.
He's saying they recorded it live in a way that was so authentic that it was hard to actually package up for the edit.
But I like, even though, like it's, it occurs to me that maybe they did a trial run, shot it, looked at the edit. I don't know how the audio sync would be off. Like what does it have to do with the fact that the DJ wasn't on camera? I just don't understand.
Not even
like,
lit
what
up, were you?
He's arguing. The guy wasn't even on camera. Okay, so what difference would that make?
Yeah, I don't
yeah,
know.
Let's get the cutoffs to the DJ finishing Kid Rock's sentences. beautiful stuff. Anyway, next year's Super Bowl, Roger Goodell, if you have any openings. Kid Rock was Kid Rock and Robert Ritchie,
both those guys.
Both.
Sam yesterday says California Resistance on sports radio. I heard a caller say, "I don't understand Italian, French, or German, but I listen to opera."
doesn't bring America together, though, does it?
Sounds divisive to me.
Opera does bring America together in the fact that most of this country hates it.
Yeah. There you go. Uday and Kusei Lutnick, this is pure slander, Sam. Stop saying these awful things about Daddy. He only knew Jeff as our babysitter. I mean, listen to him. How could you not trust him? Carly Chirk, also DSA member, special education teacher Lauren Jewett, is running for Steve Scalise's seat in the U.S. House for L.A. District 1, Louisiana District 1. She's running a great campaign and has a real chance of turning that seat over. All right. Five more. Amateur Spoon. Jumping around the stage like a rabid monkey is a drop. Lutnick says later in the interview he left the island with all of his children. So to be clear, he didn't leave any children there. In fact, he left the island with more children than he arrived with.
That's like a play on the Smokey and the Bear, right? Leave it better than he found it.
Roe Conner. Delgado should run in New York 19th again. Making him lieutenant governor was another move to disempower the left. Now we have Josh Riley, another Democratic stuffed shirt. Delgado, when he ran, he does not live in the 19th. He lives now in Pat Ryan's 18th district. So I don't know what is next for him. Kim, anything lip-synced has to be pre-recorded first. California Resistance. I just read that one. Chipster in Worcester. On Spotify, Kid Rock has a huge 5.6 million listeners a month, and this Bad Bunny guy has only a mere 96 million listeners a month. So checkmate, wokeism.
Kid Rock's literally the best that conservatives can do, too. Jelly Roll.
Catlek, Kid Rock and my pillow guy are in the same time-traveling loser or maybe in a parallel universe thing, but you can't tell me they aren't the same person. All right, three more. San Diego's finest. Hot Mike. It's probably during the Illinois Stray. People need to know and realize how much medication Puerto Rico produces. The hurricanes have constantly shown how the infrastructure cannot sustain. It hurts us all. Devoid Realty. Seriously, Sam, you are in the business. All of the cost in editing and corrections take away from the profits of the USA. And the final IM of the day. Tim Pool's beanie. Those are the lyrics from the quote Christian Super Bowl show. There you go. All right, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.